Our next guest is Steve Major, Global Head of Fixed Income Research at HSBC. Steve, thanks very much for joining us. So jumping out from the notes that you've sent us, the year of the clawback in 2023, and that investors, fixed income investors, can make back some of the money they lost last year. So that implies, I guess, that the bonds move up and the yields move down. So much so that you're predicting the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield will be only 2.5% the end of next year. Does that mean you're expecting recession?
Yeah, it's a punchy call, isn't it?
Because
we're talking about something 100 basis points below where we trade, and most people are forecasting something more like 4 to 5%. I think the point of the forecast is not just to take on board the base case. The base case is what the Fed's telling you they're going to do. They're telling you they're going to 5. They're also telling you longer run that their equilibrium is between 2 and 3. So the base case would probably put the fair value somewhere between 3 and 3.5 on the 10-year. So the reason we get 2.5 is because we're thinking about the outliers. We're thinking about the tail risk. And this is what they call the left tail risk. So we're talking, you mentioned it, recession. Just about every man and his dog is talking about recession. So that's probably going to happen. The question is, how severe is it? Or is it possible that the Fed could even reverse course in the next year or so? So you haven't got to forecast rate cuts this year. You've just got to recognize that they reach a peak, say around 5, and the next move in 2024-25 is down. And when markets get that
sniff.
When they get that sniff, or they get that bit between their teeth, is what I was thinking, then they're going to be looking for more, because markets don't expect one rate cut, they expect a whole load. So if markets are implying a 50 basis point rate cut, say in 2024, that's a bit like saying a 20% probability of 250. That's what it's saying, right? That's how you've got to think about it. So I don't think 2.5 is wrong. Well, we'll know at the end of the year, won't we?
Invite me back.
In terms of that possibility of easing, though, I mean, that was something that was just flagged today on Bloomberg by the former New York Fed chair, Bill Dudley. Says, you know, the Fed can always ease if the recession gets too deep.
Yeah.
So how likely do you see that scenario?
Yeah, and here you're talking about one of the guys in the vanguard of the hawkish view. He was early on the hawkish view. He picked up on how the Fed was going to hike. Don't forget, the hikes have been 3 to 4 times what the Fed itself was predicting this time 1 year ago. So now to be looking across the other side as the hawks are, that's telling you something. But it's also trying to be a bit too cute, because in a way, look, we know the economy responds with a lag. So it's 12 to 18 months lag. So the hikes that happened a year ago are coming through now. So people feel it in their pockets now. They feel it in their mortgages. They feel it with their job prospects or not, as the case might be in a recession.
So by the time they get to 5% or higher, you know, it comes down like a sledgehammer.
Yeah. It's a bit predictable. Maybe it's going to be something in between. The idea that you go to 5 and then at some stage in a year or so you have to go back down to 0, that seems a bit too binary. It's possible that they try and hold that 5% level for a while. But it may be that in the event they don't cut that much, but it's what markets do, isn't it? Markets go too far. And so in the same way they can go too far on the hawkish side, they can go too far on the dovish side.
So if you see the 10-year potentially heading down to 2.5 by the end of 2023, how about the 2-year? And what does it mean for your curve inversion?
Yeah, well, the 2s are going to be close to 5 if the Fed says it's going to go to 5 and change and stay there. You haven't got to be a mathematician to work it out, because you've got 4 coupons and a redemption in the space of 2 years. So if you're at 5 and you stay at 5, your yield is around 5. Now, if you build in the probability that they're going to be cutting in 2024, then you need to start thinking about a much lower yield. If the Fed is in easing mode, the 2s will scream. The yield will scream lower, and the curve will disinvert.
The one thing I don't understand is given your view, and I think the view has a lot of appeal, because the Fed is promising you that it's not going to err on stopping too early or easing too early. They want to go the whole mile. Then I don't understand why you say that default risk is not so bad this year and that you like some investment grade in Europe.
Yeah, good point. Now, investment grade credit, to some extent, especially in Europe, is discounting of recession. So we can figure out what the default probabilities are implied in today's yield. And bearing in mind you've got so much spread that you've got this protection. So if you bought 100 bonds and three of them failed, you've still got 97 that worked. So the point is, in terms of, this is where clawback comes in. If I can get somewhere between 5% and 7% yield on investment grade credit, depends where you are really, I reckon that's a good deal, and I'll be happy with that in a year's time. I can cope with a few defaults. I think recession risk is implied. In Europe, you've got the ECB as well. With its huge balance sheet, that has provided some protection. That's going to start going into reverse more for the sovereign side, but on the corporates, I'm not so worried. So the point about clawback is you're going to claw back some of the losses of 2022 through the coupon, not just through the price gains, yeah. Right? And it's going to take you a few years to get all that back. If you've lost 15%. It might take you 2 or 3 years to get it all back, but that's why it's a clawback.
Like 2009, isn't it?
Yeah, that's not a bad comparison. It's a bit like that. It is. I think that's probably a good way to go. You have to be patient, and the gains are going to come from accrual less so than through capital gain. But with clawback, I'm thinking about my fingernails and scraping them against the table.
Another nice analogy. All right, so we've talked a little about Europe. How about emerging markets?
Well, a few of the big sovereigns have become uninvestable over the years, and that actually plays into the hands of those that are more investable. That when I'm asked questions about emerging markets, I often take a pause and think, what do we actually mean by emerging markets? I mean, for example, is China an emerging market? That the sovereign bond market certainly doesn't trade like one. It's stuck in a range. It yields 2.5 to 3. It's one of the safest, most stable of all of the global sovereigns. So I don't know how much of an emerging market is. I suppose when you start to look at property stocks, you're really in emerging market territory in China. So to me, LATAM has been the sweet spot, and it probably continues to be so. You've got, but in Brazil, you've got through some of that political uncertainty. You've got huge real yields in these countries, and potential that policy is moving over to the other side into easing mode. We've liked Mexico as well for a while, so that's where the real sweet spot is. I'm always looking for the opportunity to buy India, and I guess at some stage we're going to become more positive. We're not really there yet, but if the commodity story is changing, and if prices are coming off, which has been the recent sign, then that would play into the hands of the big energy importing type of countries.
So I should like Mexico and Indonesia then?
Indonesia, I think you're right. Indo we quite like, and you can get duration as well in Indonesia. And it's one of those bellwether names. If you like EM, and I think that there are arguments with a weaker dollar, a more benign rates environment, maybe there's a recession, but a shallow recession might actually play into the hands of some of these high-yielding EM countries.
Just give you 30 seconds or so. It seemed like you were hinting at this, that the ECB might crack a little sooner than the Fed in terms of support.
Yeah, the ECB talks tough, but the proximity, the geographical proximity to Ukraine, the proximity to recession, they're in it really, the fragility that comes from running a multi-sovereign project that has one single currency, I think the odds are that they do crack, yeah.
All right, Steve, thanks very much. Very sexy stuff there for sure. And for listeners who came in maybe midstream there, you can always find this at BloombergRadio.com, or if you have access to the terminal, just go to radio. Steve Major, Global Head of Fixed Income Research at HSBC.